All right, happy Thanksgiving. I hope you guys all had a great Thanksgiving. I hope you guys ate some delicious food, enjoyed a little family time. I know I did. I want to thank Pastor David for the opportunity to speak this weekend. He'll be back next weekend, and then the following weekend after that, he'll be kicking off our Christmas sermon series, which I'm really excited about. I hope you all know how hard Pastor David works each and every week, and how much he loves you, and how much he really loves this church, and how thankful he is for you, and I am thankful for him. Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with her also. I do want to mention that we know that last weekend was a holiday weekend. A lot of people were traveling. And so if you missed our special one-day offering last year, or last weekend, or if maybe you just went home and you thought, I need to pray about this, I want to talk to my spouse about it, whatever it might be, there is still time for you to get in on this huge blessing to so many people around the world. We're encouraging everyone to give one day's worth of your annual income to this special offering that supports the Pregnancy Care Center right here in town. It supports disaster relief through Convoy of Hope, which, by the way, they are on the scene up in Paradise right now as we speak. And then also just so many different ministries and missionaries around the world through our very own missions program. There's a special envelope in your bulletin, or you can even find it on the app. And hang on to those, fill those out, and then put them in the offering boxes in the after service is over. And it's going to be, I mean, I'm just telling you, a lot of people gave last week. It was great, but we still want you to be included in this blessing as well. And also, just a reminder that this is not your tithe. This is an offering. This is above and beyond what your typical tithe is. And if you're not a believer, if you're someone who's just checking out this whole Christianity thing, if someone invited you here today, just go ahead and hit control, delete on everything I just said. That's not for you. That's okay. Unless you want to give your money, of course, we're not going to deny that. We're not going to turn you away. But really, this is for our members and our regular church attenders. Go ahead and grab your Bibles or your phones and open to the book of James, chapter 1. We're going to be getting there shortly. We'll be there shortly. But I kind of like what Trevor said. It's finally Christmas season, right? Like, I'm so excited. I love Christmas time. It is my favorite time of year. I love Christmas. And usually it's about July or August that I'm kind of getting tired of the sun and the heat, and I'm really getting excited for the cooler days of fall and winter. But I'll tell you, this year has been just a little bit different for me, and I don't know why. I feel like I never really got to enjoy summer. We never really sat outside, had a barbecue while the kids were swimming. We never really stood around and kicked the soccer ball or threw a football. We didn't get to really enjoy the backyard like we typically do. And I think the reason was because of all the mosquitoes. Like, they were so bad this year. Man, did anyone else struggle with the mosquitoes? I mean, like, they were so bad. I know Pastor David mentioned last week that him and Sue Ann have had some mosquito problems in their backyard. I mean, the mosquitoes were so terrible this year. They were awful. And then come to find out that the city has released millions of more mosquitoes into our community. And I know that they say the male mosquitoes don't bite. But as I was getting eaten alive, I was having a hard time checking whether they were male or female mosquitoes. I remember at one point my daughter went through about 2 boxes of princess Band-Aids because she thought that if she put a Band-Aid over the mosquito bite, it would stop itching. Right? But that's the worst part about mosquitoes, isn't it? It's the dreaded mosquito bite. The dreaded mosquito bite. And at first it starts with a little pinch on your leg and you think to yourself, like, man, was there something just on my leg? And you kind of make this, you know, this half-hearted swat at your leg. And then a few minutes later you realize that you've been scratching at your ankle unknowingly. And then when you finally realize that it was indeed a mosquito that bit you, you begin this full-on, no self-control scratching, right? Like, you could try to not scratch that itch, but it's like your skin is crawling. You might even be in a conversation with someone. You have no idea what they're saying because all you can think about is scratching that itch. And I know I'm not the only one that has struggled with this or has this problem. Why don't you check out this video?
Do you need some help with that itch?
Madam, I pray you're not toying with me. Whoa.
Turn around.
Oh, all right.
Ha ha ha!
As you can tell from that video, the thing about an itch is that it feels so good to scratch it. Am I right? I mean, it just feels so good. And we all know that scratching a mosquito bite makes it worse. We know that. Like, we could talk about the science behind it. You know, when, for example, a mosquito bites, it pierces your skin with its straw-like mouth, and then the mosquito actually injects a saliva into your skin. And it's the mosquito's saliva that contains various proteins that our bodies recognize as intruders, and your immune system goes into high alert, releasing a chemical called histamine. And the more you scratch the bite, the more inflamed it becomes, the more your body releases histamine, and the cycle continues. But we all know that. We all know that scratching a mosquito bite makes it worse, and yet we scratch that itch anyway. And maybe your struggle isn't a mosquito bite. I don't know. I mean, we're just coming off our Thanksgiving food comas. Maybe the itch that you continue to scratch is food. I mean, if I was to just get real with you for like just a moment, I like food. I mean, I like food. And if you know me at all, you know that I like all kinds of food. I like salty food. I like chips and crackers and salami. Basically, anything with carbohydrates is really tasty to me. But I also, my real itch is sweets, and probably more specifically, cookie dough. I like cookie dough. I sit on the couch at night watching TV with my wife, and I think about cookie dough. Jenny, my assistant, who is just up here singing, for my birthday, she makes me a cookie dough cake. And I know what you're thinking, but it's not a cake with cookie dough ice cream in it. No, that's not what I'm talking about. She takes cookie dough and she forms it into the shape of a cake and then puts a candle on top and says, here, happy birthday. Right? I like cookie dough. This is a thing for me. I like cookie dough so much that I actually have several recipes memorized in case, you know, an emergency pops up and someone needs cookie dough on the, you know, I've got a thing about cookie dough. And here's the deal. I know that cookie dough is bad for me. I know that it is. My doctor tells me that cookie dough is bad for me. He's been telling me for like 20 years that cookie dough is bad for me. I know that eating raw eggs is not healthy, and I'm probably going to get some weird disease because of it. I know these things. I know this stuff, and yet I continue to scratch that itch. And I started thinking about it. Sin is a lot like that mosquito bite. We all know the side effects. We all know the outcome. We all know what will happen. And yet we, and I say we because I'm definitely including myself in this, we scratch that itch because it feels so good. The temptation to scratch the itch is so strong that we give in. And for some people, we end up making that little mosquito bite bleed. And it turns into a big scab, or it gets infected, and it becomes this huge problem in our lives. We all have a mosquito bite that we want to scratch in our lives. And I don't know you well enough to know what your itch is. I don't know. Maybe your itch is money or shopping or sex. I don't know. Maybe your itch is gossip or cheating. Maybe your itch is selfishness or self-deprecation or about a million other temptations. But no matter what kind it is, we all have that thing that keeps coming up in our lives. That thing that makes us feel weak. That thing that leaves us disappointed or ashamed or broken. We all have a mosquito bite, and it feels like we just can't resist scratching that itch. And you may be thinking like, okay, fine, well, if we all have this thing in our lives that we're struggling with, and you know, why even try to fight it? Why even try to resist it? Well, let me ask you this. Have you ever been glad that you gave into temptation? Has it ever made your life better? It may have felt good for a few minutes or hours or days. It may have even helped you forget for just a little while. It may have even distracted you for a bit, for a little while. But have you ever felt that after you cheated or thought more highly of yourself than you ought or spent too much or drank too much or ate too much, did you ever feel like things got better? It's like that classic Dr. Phil line, like, how's that working for you? Did you have better health because of it? Did you find peace because of it? Were your friendships healthier because of it? Did you have less guilt than you did before? See, most of us know that giving into temptation, that scratching that itch, it makes the situation worse, and yet we feel totally powerless to do anything about it. Luckily, the Bible talks a lot about temptation. People throughout time have wrestled with this very issue. We could go all the way back to the beginning of time. We find Adam and Eve struggling with temptation. Achan kept some of the gold for himself. Solomon was tempted to follow other gods. Jonah was tempted to run away from what God was wanting him to do. Peter was tempted to disown Jesus. The Bible talks a lot about temptation. But there's also some great examples of people resisting temptation in the Bible. Job was tempted by Satan himself to deny his faith in God, but he resisted. Joseph was tempted by Potiphar's wife, but he resisted. Daniel was tempted to eat impure foods, but he resisted. Jesus was tempted, but resisted. And James, in his letter to the scattered churches, really to us, he says in chapter 1, verse 13, he says, when tempted, okay, let's just pause right there. Two words into it, pause, freeze, hold on a moment. We learn something right away. James doesn't say if you're tempted. He says when you are tempted. Temptation is going to happen to all of us. No matter your age or your gender, your race, your family, your job, everyone is tempted. No one is excused. And James, he goes on. He says, when tempted, no one should say, God is tempting me. For God cannot be tempted, nor does he tempt anyone. But each person is tempted when they are dragged away by their own evil desires and enticed. This is big. This is big. Don't miss this. James is saying that temptation plays on something that is already inside of us. Temptation does not work. It cannot work unless something inside of you already has a desire for what you are being tempted with. We all have temptations in our lives. We all have something that is tempting us. And the thing that tempts me may not be the same thing that tempts you. And the thing that tempts you may not be the same thing that tempts me. Can I give you an example? I hate alcohol. And I'm not saying that because I'm on a high horse or because I'm standing on a soapbox. No, no, no. I'm just saying it because I think it's a relevant thing that we can all understand. Not only do I hate the taste of alcohol, I've seen it destroy people. I had a good friend in high school who was killed because she was driving drunk. I know people who were killed because someone else was driving drunk. I've seen it destroy families and wreck relationships. I detest alcohol. And so no matter how many drinks you put in front of me, or no matter what kind of alcohol you put in front of me, I will absolutely in no way be tempted by it. And alcohol, it may not be a temptation in my life, but listen, trust me, I have plenty of other evil desires trying to drag me down. The point is that temptation, it has to do with what is already inside each one of us. Here's the deal. You would not eat it or watch it or say it or do it unless something inside of you already wanted to. And our frustration at continuing to give into temptation, our frustration at continuing to scratch that itch, it's right there in the mirror in front of you. And according to James, we can't blame anyone or anything else. We can't blame God. We can't say, God, I can't believe I'm being tempted again. God, I can't believe you're tempting me again. No, 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 no. No, we have to own it. It has to start here. But James doesn't end by saying that we are dragged down or dragged away by our own evil desires. He actually also says that we are enticed, which literally means that we are being baited or lured. Have you ever been fishing before? I love to fish. I try to get out as much as I possibly can. I enjoy fishing. I enjoy being on the water. But whether you've been fishing before or not, everyone knows the point of fishing is to try to catch a fish. Well, the thing about fishing is that it's not very easy, right? Because the deal is that fish don't want to be caught. And so the job of the fisherman is to make the bait look as appealing as possible. I brought a little tackle box this morning. This is a little hook that might be used while fishing. kind of hard to see, but this is a hook. And if the point of trying to the point of fishing is trying to catch a fish, how many fish do you think that this one little hook will catch? Not many. This is, of course, the business end of fishing, but there's not many fish that are going to swim around looking at this hook thinking, oh, great, lunchtime. There's not many. Not many fish are going to just swim by it and bite this hook. And so fishermen spend $16 billion annually to help entice the fish to bite this hook. What you have to do is you have to wrap this little hook in something that is appealing to the fish. You have to wrap this hook in something that is so delicious, that looks so tasty, that the fish cannot help but take a bite out of this hook. And the way you make that happen, the way you make this look irresistible to a fish is by wrapping it in something that is appealing to a fish. Maybe you wrap it in a giant, juicy worm. I don't know. This is not going to catch some little minnow. This is the big boys right here, isn't it? This thing's huge. Maybe a worm's not going to work that day, and you need to use a lizard. You need to use this little lizard, and then you're floating by the water. The fish is going to bite that. Maybe it's appealing to the fish. Maybe it's this crawfish or a crawdad or a crayfish. I don't know, depending on where you're from in the country. There's a crawfish. I mean, maybe the fish will find this appealing. Maybe the fish will find a big, juicy frog appealing. Right? As this thing's swimming through the water, the fish just can't help but take a bite out of this big, juicy frog. But the trick is to take those things and wrap them around this hook so that the fish cannot see the hook. And if you wrap it around that hook just right and you use just the right color, that fish will be enticed and will take a bite of that hook. And what James is trying to tell us is that when we are enticed, when we're tempted, we have to remember that there is a hook in every temptation. You're being baited. Every time that we fall to temptation, we're being led to think that it's not that big of a deal. We're being lured. And for most of us, we think, oh man, I can avoid the consequences. I can avoid the consequences, but that's a lie. You've been baited. You've been lured. You've been enticed. We think to ourselves, I guarantee I could work this thing out so that I will not get in trouble. I'm not going to get caught. I know I'm not going to get caught. We've been lured. We've been baited. We've been lied to. We think, really, this little thing that I've got going here is not that big of a deal. Again, it's another lie. And when we listen to the lies, when we get enticed, we fall for the bait and we find ourselves hooked by the consequences of temptation. But there's some good news. The good news is that James, he doesn't stop there. He tells us why he wants us to resist temptation. And that's great to me. I think that's great because, you know, we don't always automatically know why we shouldn't do this, why we shouldn't do that. Why shouldn't I look at that? Why shouldn't I go to that? Why shouldn't I eat that or drink that or spend that or say that? James gives us the answer to why we should not let ourselves be enticed. He says in verse 15, he says, then after desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin, and sin, when it is full grown, gives birth to death. About 8 years ago, I decided that I wanted to get a dog. I grew up, when I was pretty young, I grew up with a black lab, and I thought it'd be great for my kids to grow up with a black lab as well. And so I did a little research online, and I found that there was a black lab for sale down in the Visalia area. So I thought I would leave work a little early one day and head to Visalia and go pick up this dog and surprise my family with it. By the way, side note, surprising your wife with things like this is not always a great plan. That's a whole different thing, though. So I get there and I saw this little black puppy with these huge brown eyes and these big floppy ears and feet that looked like they were about four times too big, and I immediately knew she was going to be part of our family. This was the cutest little puppy in the whole world. And so I got her and I put her in the pickup, and we started heading back to town, and the whole way back she curls up in my lap and she ends up taking a nap in my lap. It was just so precious. And then when we got home, she gets down and goes and plays plays and runs and jumps and dances around with the kids. I mean, it was just the cutest little thing in the whole world. In fact, I bet Pastor Brent knows exactly what I'm talking about with his new little puppy and the pictures he's been posting online. But the thing, you know, the problem with puppies is that they grow up. The problem with puppies is that they dig huge holes. And they chew all your furniture, and they lick you, and they sniff you, and they poop all over the place. And also, dogs really stink. Like, dogs smell bad. I don't know if you know that or not. Well, what I'm trying to say is that the problem with puppies is that they don't stay puppies for very long, do they? If I could have seen what that puppy would grow into in 8 years on that day, a big, fat, lazy, gray dog that smells, I just don't know that I would have spent that much money on her. I'm just being honest. Like, you know, people don't go pay a lot of money for dogs that are old and lazy and gross. It's not a thing. James tells us that when we give into temptation, all we see is that cute little puppy that seems so easy to deal with. But James is telling us that on one day, that sin will become full grown. Sin always grows up. It always matures. And it will keep growing. And until one day you realize that you have something in your life that you can't get rid of, and you don't want anymore, and it's ruining your life. And that sin, you resent it, and you regret it, and it's wrecking your relationships. And James tells us that the sins we commit when we give into temptation, they grow. And when they do, they will ultimately lead to death. And you're thinking like, whoa, did he just say death? Did he just say death? I mean, that seems a little, I mean, come on, man. The sin's going to lead to death? Like, because I, like 2 days ago, I lied to my boss, and I'm definitely living to talk about it. So I don't know that it leads to death. That sounds a little extreme. Yes and no. The word that James uses here might actually be better translated to like the word misery. Sin causes misery. Think of it as the death of the things that make you happy and comfortable. Think of it as like the death of the things that give you peace and joy. When we give into temptation, when we scratch that itch, deep down somewhere, we feel some sort of misery or discomfort or shame over giving in. And sometimes it happens as soon as we give into temptation. Sometimes it happens as soon as we scratch that itch. But sometimes it isn't for until the next morning or until the next week. Sometimes it's not for another month or another year or another decade. But James tells us that it may not happen right away. It may not happen right away, but eventually sin will grow up and you will be surrounded by misery. Sin always matures into misery. And once misery sets in, once we begin to see the fallout of our choices, we start hearing a new kind of lie. We start to hear things like, man, how could you? How could you? You should have known better. What if people really knew what you were like? And when we listen to those lies, when we listen to those lies, we begin to believe things like, I'm being punished. We begin to believe things like, you know, a real Christian wouldn't struggle with the things that I am struggling with. We begin to believe things like, I'm worthless, or I'm far from God, or even worse, there's no way that God could possibly love someone like me. And the lies begin to pile up, and the misery grows, and the lies lead to the death of happiness and joy and peace. Today, I want to begin to wrap up by sharing what I'm going to call anti-itch treatments with you to help not scratch that itch in your lives. And these aren't going to seem incredibly profound or deep. They may not even sound like they're going to work at all. They may even sound a little lame. But I'm telling you, if you implement these two treatments into your life, they will absolutely make a difference. Okay, the first anti-itch treatment is to simply make a plan. If you've ever stayed at a hotel or just about any building, you've probably noticed the emergency evacuation plans posted near elevators or stairwells. In case of an emergency, in case something happens, they want a plan in place to move people to safety. And the same thing should be true of our lives as well. As soon as we hear that little mosquito buzzing around our ears, we need a plan to get out of there. There's a great verse in Proverbs chapter 4, verse 19 that says, "But the way of the wicked is like deep darkness. They do not know what makes them stumble." And I actually like the Message translation a little better. It reads like this, "But the road of wrongdoing gets darker and darker." We've been there before, haven't we? Yeah, we know what that feels like. Travelers, they can't see a thing, and they fall flat on their faces. Every time that we give into temptation, we probably do so simply because we don't have a plan. We don't have an escape route. We're not lighting our path, and then we stumble on our face. My guess is you're familiar with that feeling as well. But in order for a plan to work, there needs to be some strategies involved, right? There needs to be some sort of a design. There needs to be a blueprint to help us. And so I'm going to give you three parts to this plan. The first part is to be in the Word of God, to read your Bible, know the Scriptures. You remember the story of Jesus in the desert. He's wandering for 40 days. He's fasting. He's hungry. And then Satan comes to him and he whispers in his ear, "If you really are the Son of God, then why don't you just pick up a rock, make some bread, and have a meal?" And Jesus says, "It is written," and he's referring to an Old Testament verse. He says, "It is written, man does not live on bread alone." And then two more times, Jesus is tempted, and two more times, he uses Scripture to resist temptation. He had a plan. He knew the Word of God, and he was able to resist temptation. The second part of the plan is to pray. Two times in the book of Luke, chapter 22, Jesus tells his disciples to pray so that they would not fall into temptation. But this is not the first time that Jesus has linked prayer and resisting temptation together. Luke 11, the disciples come to Jesus and they ask him how to pray. And he says that when you pray, make sure you ask your God in heaven to keep you from falling into temptation. See, through prayer against temptation, we begin this process of seeking to avoid temptation, and in doing so, we actually draw ourselves nearer to God. And then the third part of this plan is to find someone to talk to. In case you're feeling not as, you know, quite like Jesus as you would like to be, in case you're feeling like, you know, reading the Bible and knowing the Scriptures and praying are things that are still, you know, you're trying to develop in your own spiritual life, you can at least find someone to talk to help you through those dark times. And hopefully you find someone that is doing those first two a little bit better than you. But find someone to call. Find someone to text, find someone to help you through that. Get plugged into a life group. Get plugged into a rooted group. Get plugged into CR. Begin to serve in a ministry here on campus or somewhere in town. But find some sort of accountability. So the first anti-itch treatment is to make a plan. And the second anti-itch treatment is to make a decision. Making a plan without making a decision is actually making a decision to actually do something about that. Well, it's just making a plan. It's just making a plan. In about a month, I will begin to make a plan to work out and to stop eating so much and to focus on my health, right? I'm going to probably look into the cost of going to the gym. I'm going to download a few apps to help track my fitness. I may or may not look into a few different diet plans. I'm going to develop this huge, full-blown plan on how to lose a little weight after the new year. But if you're anything like me, you've made that plan before, haven't you? Probably the last several years. And we've done nothing about it. Why? Well, because there was no decision deep down in my heart and down in my soul. I mean, if I'm just shooting straight, right? Because like having a plan in place does not actually get me up at 5 a.m. in the morning to head to the gym. Having a plan doesn't get me out for an afternoon walk. Having a plan doesn't stop me from eating cookie dough for breakfast. Like, it just, you know, those things only happen when we make a decision to actually do those. And that decision has to start here. It has to start here. And if we're serious about not scratching that itch in our life, if we're serious about resisting temptation, which, by the way, if you're a Christian, you should be absolutely serious about this, then we have to make a decision to make that happen. Yes, we have to have a plan to help us as much as possible, but somewhere deep inside of us, we want to pursue holiness. We have to want to pursue and choose the things of God. It just won't happen by itself. The thing that we have to realize is that God himself is the one that created joy and pleasure and desire in our lives, but he wants us to attain those things through the way that he planned it. And when we give into temptation, we short God on providing something better in our lives. When we give into temptation, we basically decide that God and his plan and his joy and happiness and peace, those are not good enough for us, and that we would rather have the temporary rather than the eternal. I want to close with this story. In 1972, there was a research paper that was published about an experiment conducted at Stanford. The now famous experiment is called the marshmallow experiment, because the researchers would begin by bringing a child into a room and setting them down and then putting one marshmallow on the table in front of them. And it was at this point that the researcher would make a deal with the child. You've probably heard this before. The researcher would tell the child that I'm going to leave the room, and that if you don't eat that marshmallow before I come back, I'm going to give you a second marshmallow. But if you eat that marshmallow before I come back, then I'm not going to give you a second marshmallow. And so every one of those kids had a big decision to make. They had to choose whether they wanted the instant gratification or something better in the future. And what's interesting, this is the part I didn't know about. What's interesting about this experiment is that it didn't just stop there. For the next 40 years, Stanford researchers followed up and they tracked those children who were able to resist temptation on that day. And they found that those children ended up having higher SAT scores, lower levels of substance abuse, lower likelihood of obesity, better responses to stress. They basically succeeded in whatever area or whatever capacity they were measured in. In other words, the children who were able to resist the temptation that day of that first marshmallow, they believed there was something better for them in the future. And that's the same. That should be the same. That's the same for us as believers. The reason for not scratching that itch in our lives, the reason for resisting temptation in our lives, is because God has something so much better planned for us. And as we learned earlier, it doesn't do any good to make a plan without a decision. But you can't make a decision without belief. And so I guess the question is this: are you going to settle for that instant gratification by scratching that itch now? Or will you choose to believe that God has something so much better for you in the future? We're about to sing a song. And there's going to be some pastors and staff and elders up here at the front. And for some of you, you don't know this Jesus. You don't know who he is. And maybe your decision today is that you need to come forward and make that proclamation. But for others, maybe this is something that you are really struggling with in your life. You just need some prayer. You need to come forward and just talk with someone. And I encourage you to do that as we sing this song. Let's all stand and sing this song together.